Judgments we make about others are usually wrong and always irrelevant and based on what we want. At the time, I was 18, 19 years old. I was comfortable in my own element. When he visited the school, his overwhelming feeling was, I don't even know why I'm here. It didn't make sense to me then, but it does now. Mike was withdrawn and shy. He was too uncomfortable in his own skin back then to be expected to seamlessly share a college environment with others from a different socioeconomic realm. Instead, he graduated from Tarleton State University in Stephenville, Texas, with a bachelor's degree in marketing and a minor in accounting. Decatur, population circa 6,000, is the perfect place for him. It offers proximity to his family, a sweet and easy 9-hole golf course, a good job with a good income, and the ability to play with his nieces and nephews and get them all riled up and then see you later. He still feels most comfortable in his own controlled cocoon and only got a cell phone because his sisters made him. He has regrets like the rest of us. There was a significant other in his past. I wonder if he now wishes he had given Austin College more of a chance. But his response is vintage Winchellian when I asked him what he might have changed. If you invented a time machine, you'd be the richest man on the planet. Touché. I don't want my son to go through what I went through. It was horrible. I drive down to Beaumont from Fort Worth. The next morning, I head for a low-slung, cream-colored building on the outskirts of town. It's part of a complex of virtually identical cream-colored buildings. The complex looks like a typical office park, until you get closer and notice the manicured spools of razor wire. Texas likes its places of incarceration tightly knit, a prison theme park. I wait for Booby Miles in the waiting room of the Mark W. Stiles unit. There are 48 booths, each of them separated by thick plexiglass, visitor on one side, inmate on the other. They look like makeshift confessionals. Forgive me, for I have sinned. Say 3 Hail Marys and hope the fuck you make parole. In the middle of the waiting room are round tables of pressed wood for so-called contact visits. There's a shelf containing books you can read while you wait. The offerings are meager. What Happens When I Talk to God? Toads in Trouble. The Bible. A Rules and Regulations pamphlet from 2008. There's a poster on the wall for a program called J-Pay that makes it possible online to send money or an email to prison inmates all over the country. The internet leaves no stone unturned. The room is painted. There's a row of vending machines in the back. There's a door opposite from where I'm seated. After several minutes, the door opens. My heart ticks up because I haven't seen Booby in the 2.5 years he's been here. An inmate enters, followed by a guard. He heads straight in my direction, ready to be interviewed. He seems remarkably eager, except for one discrepancy. He isn't Booby Miles. The prison has sent the wrong inmate down. He looks disappointed when he's sent back. I feel a little guilty not interviewing him. It is a welcome mishap, reducing my feelings of frustration with Booby, the chances he was given. I begin to remember with better clarity what he's been through in his life, the beatings he received from his father, his early separation from his mother, the foster homes he was in until his rescue by his uncle L.V., the system of sports in this country, the grind 'em up and spit 'em out if you get hurt, or the coaches find someone better, was the final wound. Yes, he had had some chances in life, but his life also ended when he was 18, at least the version of life that he and everyone around him had encouraged to the exclusion of anything else. Big-time football player. There's no more false hope. Yet thousands of times a year, kids are manipulated into believing it until they're thrown away. Booby Miles comes through the door. The correct Booby Miles. The last remnants of disappointment fall off. I can feel my breath taken away. I wanted memories, and now I am getting them. I suddenly realize I don't want them, at least not ones like these. Too long ago, too painful, because they're also too beautiful. I'm seeing a tape of Booby his junior year. I'm seeing his speed and strength, a man among boys. But it's the way in which he runs with such joyful abandon that is killing me. He has ended up in the Mark W. Stiles unit after violating the terms of his 10-year probation on a conviction for aggravated assault. In a peak of anger, arguing with someone in a car, Booby said he was insulting his family. He hit him in the side of the head with a beer bottle. Booby had no prior felony record. What scraps he had had with the law were related to driving without a license or failure to pay child support. He was given probation. He made the regular visits to his probation officer for a while, but then he quit. When he was stopped in Dallas for making an illegal U-turn, an outstanding warrant for violation of his probation came up. He was sentenced to 10 years in prison in 2012, eligible for parole in 2017. I'm sitting at one of the little tables of pressed wood as he comes toward me. He's in a white prison uniform. He carries the square of a little towel with him to wipe his face, since any exertion makes him sweat profusely. He weighed 420 pounds when he went into prison, more than double his playing weight. He could barely walk without exhaustion. He's now down to 368, yet for all the change, his face is exactly the same as it had been in high school. There's still the little kid smile, its eternal sunshine. There's still the same laugh from a deep and honest well. It makes me smile. It makes me want to cry. He says he needed to go to prison to put his head right. He's done that by truly accepting responsibility for the first time since I've known him. I feel good about myself. I felt like if something like this didn't happen, I might be dead somewhere. But there's also such sadness in the way he relentlessly chastises himself for not being stronger, not being harder, not being a better man. I could never pick up the pieces. I could never just get it together. Every time I thought I could get it together, it just fell apart. When they fell apart, I just let it happen. I didn't try to stay strong. So I just started going all in. Whatever happens, happens, is how I took it. The book gave Booby a measure of fame. The film catapulted him into celebrity. Although in Booby's case, I can't think of anyone who benefited less from it. I actually think it hurt him. Hard to accept the routine of working a job and raising a family when people are asking for your autograph at the mall. I also think it kept bringing him back to that moment in the fading light of Jones Stadium in Lubbock when he blew out his knee in a meaningless preseason scrimmage. He needed to let go of it, not keep coming back to it and feel like he was owed something because he had been so terribly cheated. But that was impossible. His life really did end in that fading light. When the film was being shot at Ratliff Stadium in Odessa, a considerable crowd of local extras gave him a standing ovation. He enjoyed the star turn. It was also a half-assed way of people forgiving themselves for the racism that had been heaped on him his senior year after he could no longer play. The amount of money he received for his film rights, $1,000, was shameful. I significantly supplemented that sum out of my own pocket after pleas to the producers went nowhere. A rap song called Booby Miles, written and performed by Big Crit, received over 1 million hits on YouTube. Booby was never contacted by the rapper, much less compensated for the use of his name in the title. As far as I could tell, the only increase in Booby's lifestyle was paternity suits from women who now thought he was rich. It happened the way it happened. Ain't anything we could do about it. I had heard him say similar words before, but his voice always got quiet and low when he said them, as if he was still watching his own game film, still poised to take his place as one of the elite college running backs in the country. It was more matter-of-fact now. I took it as a good sign. But so many times before I had misread signs with Booby, giving him money in the hope that it would bring stability and help with the raising of his kids, buying him a car, helping him find jobs, paying for trade school and HVAC. The pattern had always been the same, a period of equilibrium, the rhythm of routine, and then another phone call to tell me he was broke. Booby went to Ranger Junior College in Ranger, Texas, after he graduated from Permian. Because of his knee injury, he no longer had the speed that had made him so gifted, along with his formidable size. He got caught from behind. He was a disappointment to his coach and teammates. He flunked out. There was a brief and unhappy stint with a semi-pro team in Culpeper, Virginia. He moved back to Midland, Odessa, and held down a series of menial jobs, the exact opposite of the attention he so craved. Driving a forklift, warehouse inventory. In 1998, his uncle, L.V., died. The loss of L.V. was not simply the loss of a father figure, but the only person he truly trusted. I lost the person who loved me the most, and I loved the most. I became actively involved in Booby's life at that point. I'd seen what had happened to him at Permian and couldn't live with simply being immune to it. I talked to him regularly. I saw him at his very best in the early 2000s as a father to his twins, James and Jasmine. I also saw what happened when he lost them in a fractious custody dispute. They were his heart. I didn't have to wake up and get them dressed for school. I didn't have to wake up to, "Daddy, pull me some cereal." I didn't have to wake up to Jasmine with the milk jug on the floor and the bowl of cereal. I cherished all that. That's what kept me going. What Booby needed most, constant reinforcement of his value as well as equally constant personal counseling to prevent frustration, was not something I could give or was prepared to give. I also realized that giving him money, particularly large chunks of it, wasn't good for him. It was too tempting, as he told me, not to spend it on some blitz of booze and cocaine and ecstasy and strip clubs, or give it to people he knew for business deals, who then fleeced him. Before long, it was gone, and he was broke again. The last time I saw Booby before he went to prison was in March of 2012. He was working in the oil field and actually seemed more tougher than I had ever imagined him. I was working on an e-book about him called After Friday Night Lights, and we split the proceeds. It should have led to greater peace of mind and security. It only led to more binging. When I got a text from Brian Chavez that Booby was in jail for violating probation and was looking for someone to pay for a lawyer, I knew who that someone was. I was crapped out. Nothing I had done ever made a significant difference. I let him know that now. I was really pissed at you. Don't be, man. Like I say, it's all on me. You did everything in your power to help. I screwed that up. I screwed up, and I mean I'm sorry. At the time, I wished I could have been strong enough to sit down and talk with you, and maybe you could have helped. At that point in time, I was so wicked. Booby keeps mostly to himself in prison. He says he has seen some things that he never wants to see again. He doesn't volunteer more, and I don't want to know more. He doesn't have many visitors. One of them is a woman with whom he has a child. She's remained loyal to Booby. If he can stay with her when he gets out, keep his head down, and get a job, then maybe. I have no illusions. But when I look at him across the little round table, I know that of all the themes raised in the book, The tragedy of Booby Miles is the most important and the most enduring one. In today's ever-increasing obsession with sports, I wonder if anyone is really listening or even cares. When Booby was playing for Permian, he got 80s and 90s on his report card. The day before a test, he said he had a tutor who gave him the answers. As long as I could play, I could get A's. When you got any kid at 15, 16, 17 years old, they're going to accept that. I'm here to tell you, don't accept that. It's hard to, but don't accept it. Because look what happens. You get hurt, and they don't care no more. Which is probably why he suddenly had 50s and 60s on his report card after the injury. Which was shocking enough, but paled in comparison to being called a big, dumb old nigger, and the laughing suggestion that, like a horse gone lame, he should be shot. 25 years of time will never excuse those words. Booby's son goes to high school in Texas. He'll be a junior this fall and got picked for a Nike football camp. The smile comes to life when he talks about the son being a spitting image of him on the field. Prison is not a good place to offer fatherly advice. But Booby writes and talks to him on the phone as much as he can to make sure he listens to the message that Booby never heard. If you don't have football, you have to have something. I don't want him to turn out like I turned out. That's my worst fear. I don't want my son to go through what I went through. It was horrible. I don't want that for him. Booby has found introspection during his time in prison. His self-awareness is a wonderful thing, but watching someone find it in prison will break anyone's heart. It's time to leave. We've had more than an hour together, and the guard is getting a little restless. Booby and I clasp hands, then we embrace. There is a lot left to say, but maybe there is nothing except this. I love you, man. I love you, too. I watch him leave. I hover near the waiting room entrance, looking through a window into an empty corridor. Everything is still, empty. There's the flash of another memory. It's the one of Booby at the watermelon feed, walking through a narrow aisle to the cheering crowd with a beatific smile on his face, young, handsome. Strong. Immortal. Mike Winchell was right. If only there was a time machine. Whatever Dez Bryant feels playing for the Cowboys, what Tony Romo feels playing for the Cowboys, we got to feel. The undulations of the hill country gave way to the parchment of West Texas. The final 60 miles to Odessa are flat and scrubby, a balding scalp with a little picket fence of hair. Plastic bags and cups line the highway. Rickety, double-wide mobile homes look like they were set down by the wind one early morning and just left there. You wait for someone to emerge, bleary-eyed, with a beer in one hand, a shotgun in the other, looking for his favorite T-shirt underneath the Ford F-150. It never was a place to be accused of natural beauty. Downtown Odessa might as well be part of the Ice Age, exactly the same as I first saw it in the spring of 1988. The Scott Theater is still closed down, so is the Ector. I make an immediate assumption that nothing has changed. But Odessa is different. The boom in oil prices over the past several years has meant a boom in jobs and population and building. In 1990, the population was about 90,000. In 2013, it was roughly 111,000. Between 2011 and 2012, Odessa was the fifth fastest growing area in the country. Rival Midland and the surrounding area was first. Driving east on Highway 191 toward the Ector County line, the proliferation of new housing makes the area look like a Dallas suburb. It's the same when you drive north.